has come and passed. The innocent can never last. Wake me up when September ends. Like my father's come to pass, 7 years has gone so fast. Wake me up when September ends.
Hey there, folks. It's Tyler with the Birds, Booze, and Buds podcast. I am so unbelievably ready for bird season. It's crazy. So I was driving around today delivering mail, and that song came on the radio, and it's always been one of my favorite songs, but that's kind of the mood that I'm in. It's like, I'll just take a nap right now, starting right now, wake up, how about 1st of September? Wake me up when September starts. How about that? It is currently 61 days until the start of the upland hunting season here in North Dakota and a lot of other states. I'm always really excited for summer, living in North Dakota, like I do, as all of you guys know. We do get a little bit of snow. Winters are a little bit cold. And I'm always really excited for summer, and then the fishing's really great in April and May and June. And then it seems like as soon as the calendar turns to the 1st of July, I'm just like, I'm over it. I'm not 100% over it, but I'm kind of over it. I'm ready for the days to shorten up a little bit, and actually we've had some cool weather, so I mean there's that. It's not like it's been stupidly hot or anything, but I'm ready to be able to go out and just run with my dogs and go and see what I'm excited to see what the hatch is going to look like, all of it. So I don't know what it is about July, but it's like when everything really starts ramping up, and it doesn't really slow down from the time that basically from the middle of July until the end of January. So starting here in a couple weeks, I'm probably going to wait until August 1st to get out and start running on some wild birds up here with my dogs, but legally we could start July 15th. I have a feeling that the hatch is probably not going to be very good this first go around. We've had a lot of cool, cold, rainy weather, and so I'm sure the pheasants are re-nesting. I'm sure the sharptails are. We may have lucked out with the huns. I'm not sure yet. But I'm gonna let the birds just kind of be until August 1st. I'm gonna give them that extra 2 weeks, and then even when that does start, I'll only run a field one time. I kind of use it as scouting. I use it as a little bit of just kind of getting the dogs back in shape, all of it. So this year I'll have Bo out there. He'll be back from the trainers August 1st. I'll have Rusty, and CJ will be over in Michigan. Little girl, she'll be over there with Justin McGrail. She's gonna get a 6 week steadiness course, I guess would be the best way to put it. So before I go any farther, I know I've been rambling. That's just kind of the way this works sometimes. I got a million things on my mind, as it seems like I have the last few weeks. The farther and farther I get into summer, the more manic I get. So bear with me. I got to thank sponsors. Thank you very much, Dakota 283 Kennels. I went down to Medora this last weekend. Took my grandma and my aunt and some other friends. Took CJ and Rusty along. I had their Dakota 283 T1, the tonneau cover kennels. I had both of them end-to-end in the back seat. And then I also had the two Dakota 283 mediums ratchet strapped down in the box of the pickup. So that way, when I was driving around, if it was cool enough outside, I could have them in the kennels in the back. If not, I'd put them in the back seat and just leave the air conditioning on. But I did bring all four kennels with, which was kind of crazy. But, you got the toys, you might as well use them, right? But everything, as always, worked flawlessly. In fact, I had a couple people stop me at the gas station when I was filling up with gas, ask me what kind of kennels those particular ones were and how they could get some. So I gladly passed on, go to Dakota283.com. The code B310 is no longer good. That particular promo, I believe, ended July 1st. As far as I know I got a new email today. I got to kind of go back into it and see exactly what the new offer is, and then I'll let you guys know next week. If you guys are Patreon patrons, there is a discount code on there that is bigger than the 10% anyways. So if you guys are looking to buy a kennel, donate 5, 10 bucks a month, whatever it is, you guys will get a pretty sweet discount, which will absolutely make up for what you're going to donate. as well as put you in the drawing for, I think I'm 24 patrons away from giving away the Dakota 283 Medium. Also, we got a bunch of other cool giveaways coming up for Patreon patrons. I'm going to give away a Dogtra Pathfinder Mini. Todd Lehner, my dog trainer friend over in Montana, the one who's doing all the work with Bo right now, he offered up a $200, basically a coupon for whatever you want over there with Etta's Kennel to Patreon patrons. I'm going to give that away here in a couple weeks. That's for if you want to take your dog to a week of training or if you want to take $200 off a started dog. He also does one-on-one lessons, which are like $50 a lesson. So if you want to go over there and do a couple, four lessons with him, get them for free. So if you guys live close, that's something else. As well as the next real big giveaway is going to be November 1st or right around there. But I'm going to draw a name out of all the Patreon patrons for the Arizona trip, which is what kind of appropriate to talk about today because my guest that I'll tell you guys all about here in a few minutes, this podcast is going to be Arizona-centric for the most part and quail-centric for the most part. So, but we will be giving away, it's five nights at my aunt's bed and breakfast, breakfast, dinner every day. We're going to be down there for 2 weeks, so you can kind of just come whenever you want. Just let me know. And all that, you know, for donating $5 or $10 a month, your name will go in. One time if you donate five, two times if you donate 10. There is a $20 donate button. If you do decide you want to increase your odds, you can donate $20 and your name will go into the hat four times for all these prizes. So it's enough of that. Dogtra, I mentioned them as far as I'm going to be giving away the Dogtra Pathfinder Mini. That's probably going to be right before hunting season or sometime early September. They're really, really great callers. Had a lot of people who've been asking me a ton of questions about them. There are certain things that I had a buddy of mine, Jason Babinchek, who's been on the podcast before. He mentioned that he's looking for another tracking collar for he just got a new puppy this year. I told him the same thing. I don't really recommend it for. I mean, you could use it in tandem with another collar, but I would not use it strictly as a training collar. It's kind of that I'm going to use it as that peace of mind, where it's, you know, it's $400, $399 or whatever they are. The mapping is fantastic. You can I'm going to keep it on my dogs during the fall, and then I'm never going to open up the app unless I need to figure out where they are, because I like to use beeper collars and have that remote control on my chest that I can stimulate them when they need a correction, or when I can beep them if I need them to turn and go with me. It's just a lot easier than opening up the app and using your phone. So, but thank you very much, Dogtra. I'm hoping to have my hands on a new set of the TMBs. I just spoke to my guy at Dogtra here a couple days ago, and hopefully they're going to be sending those out to me here by the end of the month. I'll talk to you guys about that when I get them. Looking forward to it. I've been using my TMBs since 2002, the same set. So they are a product that lasts for a long time. The last and final sponsor that I got to thank is ESP, Electronic Shooters Protection. I haven't been out shooting, but in a couple weeks I'm going to be back down in Michigan when I go to drop CJ off at Justin McGrail's. My aunt's going to go with me, and we're going to meet up with Craig Jones and all them crazy characters over there, Two-Box of Bird DeWitt and all them. We're going to go do some kayaking, but we're also going to go shoot sporting clays, which I'm pretty excited about because I've shot lots of trap and lots of skeet, but I've never got to shoot sporting clays. So I will be bringing my ESPs along just for that, but I haven't got to shoot with them in much here lately, but they are a great product. Very much looking forward to using them this fall as well, specifically when I'm out duck hunting. I think those are going to become really handy for duck hunting, but I'll definitely use them for upland as well. But those big Magnum, 3-inch Magnum rounds going off out of a gun, they're loud. Plus, I'll be able to hopefully hear them duck wings flapping just a little bit earlier, and hopefully I can get spun around and shoot some ducks before some other people can. So thank you very much to the sponsors. Today's podcast is going to be with Dan Priest. I'm sure most of you guys know who he is. He is the founder and now the consultant of Q5. You can check out all their products at Q5OutdoorProducts.com. I've been using a Q5 centerfire vest for, this will be my third season. It is, no kidding, the nicest bird vest I've ever seen. I've seen all the other ones There's one other one out there that I'll mention some other time that's close, but I still like mine better. I use the Centerfire. It's kind of the way that they bill it. It's kind of like the Bird Hunter's Day Pack, and that's exactly what I use it as. It's got a nice little backpack, kind of like, what the hell would be the proper way to say it? Well, there's a place to put storage, I guess. It has a bunch of storage on the back where I carry, all kinds of things. I carry some vet wrap in case a dog gets into something. I carry hemostats and a pair of needle nose for if they get into a porcupine. I always have a couple extra shells in there. I always have an extra pair of boot laces in there, which may not sound normal, but let me tell you, the first time that you break a boot lace out in the middle of a great big giant rolling piece of prairie when you're chasing sharptails, you will start carrying extra boot laces in your vest, I promise. It's a pain in the ass to try to walk out with your boot falling halfway off your foot. I just carry everything. I put some granola bars in there. It's got tons of storage for all the water that a guy could possibly want to carry. In fact, I carry, it's got on the hip belt, it's got two pouches for, I think it holds up to 32 gallon water, like the athletic water squirt bottles. I carry one on each hip, and then I carry one extra one in the back, like when I'm down in Arizona. So I can actually carry over 100 ounces of water. When you look at the price, you're going to think, oh my God, is it really worth it? Because they're pretty expensive. They're close to $300, but I've had mine for two seasons. It has held up extremely well. From the grouse woods of Michigan and Minnesota to the deserts and the mountains of Arizona and literally everything in between, I haven't had a single problem with it. The zippers are great. The shell pouches are in a good spot. It's got a chest mount for your receiver for your collar, so you don't have to be reaching around fumbling for something. You can just literally reach up to your chest and beep them or nick them if you need to. It's really nice products. So I'm going to talk to him about that as well as a bunch of other stuff. So we're going to get into a whole bunch of stuff. Thank you very much for listening. If you guys would, please go to iTunes and give me a rate and review. Keep sharing the episodes on Facebook. I know a couple of you guys have been giving me a lot of shit because I've been sharing to like 40 groups or something like that. Every month for the last 4 months, the podcast has been growing by pretty good numbers. And I'm not sure if that's why or not, but I'm going to keep on doing that for the time being anyways. But keep on sharing on your personal pages with all your hunting buddies. And go to patreon.com/B3podcast if you feel like donating $5 or $10 and getting into the drawing for all these great products that I'm going to be giving away. I'm going to really do my best to make sure that you Patreon patrons, I'm going to reciprocate the love that you're showing me by giving you guys a bunch of free shit. So, one last thing. I do have some new t-shirts coming out here pretty soon. I will have the guy Ryan Kappas on here probably in the next week or two. He's going to go over, he's built an online store and all that kind of stuff. So, we'll talk all about that here in future episodes. So, thank you very much for listening, and we will talk to you, well, in just a few minutes, literally. Hey there, folks. It's Heather of the Birds, Booze, and Buds podcast. I'm sorry to my guest here. We just had a little technical malfunction. Dan Priest, thank you very much for taking a little bit of time and being patient with somebody who doesn't know how to handle computers at all.
You're very welcome. So, and I'm glad to be on your podcast.
So tell the folks kind of just where exactly are you calling me from right now? Because that's kind of I don't know that I've ever done an interview with somebody who is literally standing on a cliff.
Well, good. I kind of like doing things a little unusual. We have camps going on right now in the White Mountains of Arizona. And where camp is at right now at this point, there's no cell signal. So in order for me to get a cell signal, I have to drive about 30 miles north, 30 miles on dirt, to get out on this little point where I can get a good cell signal.
Jeez. Well, we're going to get all into why you're up there in the mountains at your camp right now here in just a little bit. But before we get there, I want to start with, I'm sure that everybody or most people who listen to your listen to this podcast have either heard you on other podcasts or know your products. That's kind of how I first learned who you were, and then I kind of really started following along with you on Facebook and kind of figured out all the stuff that you're doing to help the sport out, literally, which we'll, again, we'll get into here in a little bit. But 2 years ago, this month actually, I bought your guys' Q5 centerfire vest. And it was the best damn money I've ever spent in my life as far as bird hunting goes. And that goes, I'm even counting that, like, period. Like, that is the, that vest has helped me stay out in the field longer and helped me get more, put more birds in the bag than good ammo, boots. I mean, the boots and that vest are probably the two things in the last 5 years that I've bought that have really changed the way that I hunt a little bit. So thank you very much. Your guys' products are awesome.
That is so good to hear.
So let's kind of walk the folks through a little bit about, you know, what led you to creating this wonderful product and kind of the road that went down there. You're the founder of Q5, and now you're a consultant. But how did the whole thing kind of get started?
It goes back to many, many years of bird hunting, and what I would do is I would buy two or three different bird vests,
mm-hmm.
and then I would take those vests to a tailor or somebody that does alterations and work with them on, I need this pocket over here and this size pocket over there, and I need this on the back and all of that kind of stuff. And at one point in time, on several of those vests, what I would do is I would just buy a day pack and then have it sewn on the back of these vests that I was working with to have made into what I thought was the kind that I wanted. And then as time went on, I began to think more and more about the possibility of building a vest. And I'm in the White Mountains right now, and actually the vests are built here in the White Mountains. And as I had camps going on, I became acquainted with Pack Shack, who builds the vests, and went in and talked to Tom and Karen about doing a couple, two or three different prototypes, and we worked with that for a while, and came up with the centerfire. And one of the nice things about it is I do like that day pack.
Yeah, me
too. I've always liked having a day pack on my vest. And the nice thing about that is the day pack is removable. So if you don't want it, you can take it off. You're going to be on a shorter round where you don't need it. And the back of the vest is ventilated, so your back can stay cool if you want to do without the day pack. But there was a couple other things, like, you know, the little utility pouches, and then the fact that the pockets are, there's several different types of pockets that can be put on that vest,
mm-hmm.
for different situations. So I guess with all of what I did with tailors and the people who do alternations and all of that kind of stuff, the whole idea of having a modular pack was how that came about.
Well, sure. I mentioned a little bit in the intro that I did before I got you, before we started talking on the air, that in my personal Q5, I never take the pack off just because it's so light and you just don't even notice it. And I carry so much stuff in there. I carry vet wrap in case something happens to a dog. I carry... up here in North Dakota, we're lucky enough to have porcupines, so I carry a good Leatherman and some hemostats and granola bars and just all. I one of the things that I've started carrying in there here in the last couple of years, I mentioned in the intro as well, is that I was out on a big loop for sharptails here about 3 years ago, and I blew out a boot lace way out in the middle of the prairie. I was like 5 miles from my truck. And now I carry extra boot laces in my Q5 centerfire pack as well. Just all kinds of little stuff like that that a person may not ever need, but it just doesn't take up any weight. So why in the heck wouldn't you? You know, if you have the storage like you guys have on your product, it really makes it nice to carry all those little things that a person doesn't really think about with them.
That's true, and you know what? A boot lace, an extra boot lace or two, comes in handy for a lot of other things too.
Absolutely,
so, that's a good idea.
Yeah, I trying to walk back with one boot falling off your foot and through a little bit of rolling hills and tangled grass is not fun. I promise you, it's not a good time. But
imagine.
You know, the big thing that really sold me on the centerfire and the Q5 in general. Is the ability to carry a lot of water with you. And anybody who's ever hunted in Arizona, certainly, or even up here in the northern plains, or really anywhere, water can be a limiting factor on how long you can be away from the truck on certain walks at certain times of the year. Anytime that it's over about 60 degrees, I load my Q5 up with literally close to 100 ounces of water. Like I'll carry two big squirt bottles and one in the back. And that is just the ability to be able to stay out there longer has helped me become a little bit of a better bird hunter.
And you know, chucker hunters really like that pack too. And that's one of the reasons is so that you can stay out all day. And you know, Tyler, you've hunted Mearns quail and sometimes be so crowded in some of the easier places to get to, but some of the better Mearns hunting. It's long distances from the truck and sometimes a pretty good climb to get into that country. And so, yeah, the extra, not only extra water, but carrying a lunch where you can stay out all day is huge.
Sure. Would you mind going into a little bit of the different products that you guys carry? And then also, I know that you guys have a new vest that's coming out that's going to be very exciting for some of the listeners as well. Would you mind going through them a little bit?
Yeah, I'll start off with what we're working on right now, and that is a vest for women. And what we've done with that is we've taken the Rimfire, which is just a small version of the Centerfire, and we've done a few little tweaks with the Rimfire to work that into a vest for women. You know, the Centerfire is the big one. That's the one that will carry a lot of stuff. The bird bag is huge in the Centerfire. You carry several pheasants in that
bird bag. I personally carried six pheasants out of a field in that Q5. So it seems like every once in a while I'll have a buddy who will forget a vest in the pickup. And then I end up carrying all of his birds back out as well. So I know for sure it'll hold six pheasants.
and sometimes that's not a good thing because you end up carrying everybody else's birds.
That's right.
But anyway, another one that a lot of chucker hunters like is the Quillamine Upland, and Quillamine is now built by Q5, and that one is also one that will carry a lot of gear, will carry a lot of water, and a pack that's made for those that want to stay out all day long. Then if you step down from the Upland, you go to another pack, and it's a Quillamine San Carlos. And that one is a very small version of the Upland. It doesn't have anywhere near the bells and whistles, although there's still a lot that can be done with that San Carlos. I think there's several different pockets on it. There's a couple wallet pockets back in the back part of the bird bag. That's good for carrying water and other gear. And then several other pockets as well. And then there's an Upland bird belt, and the bird belt is just for little short rounds. You know, the bird bag will carry, I wouldn't put more than one pheasant back there. It will carry six quail. I use that a few times for quail on short rounds, and I can put six quail in there without any trouble.
You see, and the thing that that belt to me would work really well for is I have a lot of friends from the Great Lakes states that they ask me about getting one of the center fires, and I say, you know, it's I use mine all the time. It's the only vest I own anymore. But with the center fire is a little bit big on your back if you're in the grouse woods. And that upland belt would actually work really well for going through the grouse woods, I would bet.
It would, and a lot of grouse hunters like that San Carlos.
Oh, okay.
And one of the nice things about it is, you know, there again, you can change the pockets out, and so you can put a smaller pocket on that San Carlos. You could actually do the same thing with a center fire, just take the pockets off.
Mm.
But for somebody like a big framed person,
that's me.
Center fire would probably work okay in
right.
the grouse wood. But the way it would work okay would be to just take the side pockets off and use the there's a couple other pockets on the vest where you could put shells. And generally, you're not going to shoot all that much in the grouse woods anyway.
Yeah, anybody who takes more than 10 shells with them on a walk for rough grouse is being either overly optimistic or just delusional, because that would be a heck of a walk if you had to shoot more than 10 times on a walk for rough grouse, I'd say.
Yeah, and in that case, you really wouldn't even need to have shell pockets on the vest.
Really? Yeah, no kidding. I mean, you know, most of those guys nowadays, they're up there carrying those side-by-sides. So, I mean, if you flush five grouse and shoot two both barrels apiece, that's a heck of a walk right there.
Well, and you know what? If a guy's a good shot, he's probably gonna pick up all the grouse he wants to carry back with five shells anyway.
That's about it. I'd hope so, anyways. I mean, I don't know what those guys are doing, but those forest chickens are they're a little bit faster, and there's a few more obstacles in the way than the sharptails. But I've never found them to be that hard to hit. I mean, you know, out of five shells, I might be able to hit feathers on at least one bird.
Yeah. Well, another product, if I could mention that,
mm-hmm.
is we have taken that upland bird belt and created that where it can be used as a clays belt.
Oh, okay.
And the bird bag can come off, and there's a little utility pouch that will go on the back.
Okay.
And so you could modify that so that you could turn that into quite a clays belt, and we're selling that as well as a clays belt. So there's so many different ways that all of these vests can be constructed in a way that's suitable for whatever your needs are.
You know, with
something else.
Oh, go ahead.
Something else to mention, Tyler, is if a person goes on the website and looks at accessories.
Mm-hmm.
There's quite a few accessories there, such as Garmin.
Mm-hmm.
We're selling Garmin products now. And there's other accessories that's there on the website. So Q5 is moving more and more into a place that's very convenient for bird hunters.
Okay. And I mentioned it in the intro, but I'll mention it again. That's Q5OutdoorProducts.com. I was just on there a little bit before I got on the phone with you, Dan, and it's a really nice website. And I did scroll through the accessories and saw that you guys were carrying a bunch of collars now and GPS.
Well, it's kind of nice to be able to go on one website and design whatever you want for your bird pack.
Sure.
And so, you know, the Garmin products, definitely a part of that. And then also hydration platters as well.
Sure, sure. Absolutely. Yeah, because I'm always worried about the dogs having water, but I have had to drink out of a slobbery dog water bottle before, and it's not the greatest thing in the world. The hydration bladder is kind of nice to have. I know from
Very
experience.
True.
One of the one thing I wanted to ask you about that Upland belt, as soon as when you were talking about being able to kind of transform that into a clays and skeet belt, the first thing that came to my mind is that is dove hunting. During when I'm out dove hunting, I wear my the same pouch that I wear on the on my side when I am shooting skeet and trap, because if the doves are really coming in hot and heavy, it's nice to just have that right there on your side with that big open pouch. Would that particular product work pretty well for dove hunting as well? Would you be able to carry a good number of doves out in that thing as well, wouldn't you?
You would, and then there's another alternative, and that is that Magnum pocket.
Okay.
And the Magnum pocket will carry a lot of shells, which in a lot of cases you do need for shooting doves.
Mm-hmm.
And then if you put a Magnum pocket on both sides, you could put doves in another side.
There you go.
If your game bag got too full. But that Magnum pocket will hold a lot of stuff. And it works okay as well for dog training, where you can put some live birds in that.
In
that Magnum.
Well, that makes a lot of sense. Is there?
So we're thinking of everything.
Yeah, you guys are. I really can't oversell your the center fire enough. I mean, I you know, when I was, and I'll be 100% honest with you. When I was first looking at them, I was trying to figure out if spending that kind of money on a product was worth it or not, and it absolutely is. You know, they're like, I've had mine for 2 years in everything from the rough grouse woods of Michigan to the deserts of Arizona and New Mexico, and I don't have a scratch on it. Everything has worked flawlessly. The no zipper malfunctions. I mean, it is. You know, it seemed like before I would go through a vest every 2 years. This vest is going to last me for a long, long time. So you really do. It's really kind of like buying boots. I mean, you there are certain things that a bird hunter just should not skimp on, and vests and boots are kind of two of them.
I definitely agree with that.
All right. Well, let's shift gears here just a little bit. Can you kind of tell everybody about the Arizona Outdoor Adventures and kind of how that whole thing got started?
I can. This whole, it's a nonprofit organization, and started it back well over 20 years ago. And it started one evening when I was driving away from Phoenix, as a matter of fact, and headed out with another fellow. We were headed to New Mexico to do some scouting for antelope. He had an antelope tag.
Okay.
And we just started talking about all the kids. As we drove out of town, all the kids that's missing out on the outdoors and what could be done to introduce more kids into the outdoors. And that conversation took place long before AOA, Arizona Outdoor Adventures, got started. And as time went on, I began to think more and more about that conversation. And I think it was about the mid-90s, somewhere in there, I just decided to go ahead and, you know, look into it, get the paperwork done, and get the ball rolling on it. And what we do primarily are provide these backcountry camps for different youth organizations. So a youth organization that has a number of, the age group that we're looking at is 8 to 14, a number of boys and girls in that age group, we're providing the camps for them. And then we have also started in the last 2 years, we started doing more in the way of all-around, all-year-long camps, where once the high elevations get a little bit too cold, and that's another factor about Arizona with the different elevations, we'll drop down to the desert and begin to put some camps together down on the desert. And those usually run November through, by May, it starts to get a little bit too warm on the desert. So,
okay,
you know, November through April. And then, like this year, we got started back up in the high country, the the end of May.
Okay.
But we've got something going on with ALA every month of the year.
That's great. There's nothing more important. One of the organizations that I'm involved with is Delta Waterfowl. And one of the reasons that I like that organization so much is because they are very concentrated on getting youth involved in the outdoors. At the Delta banquets, they're always, any kid who comes there is going to leave with a duck call, decoys, all that kind of stuff. And they give away a bunch of youth guns and all that kind of stuff. And that, it's been said a million times. I know that people are probably tired of hearing it, but it's important to say. They really are the future, and getting them, yep. Whether you're getting them involved in hunting, fishing, or whatever, I've never met a fisherman that was anti-hunting. I've never met a hunter that was anti-fishing. So there's so much crossover. If you just get them involved in the outdoors in general, they're going to kind of explore and expand on whatever you're teaching them up there on their own. Like, you're just kind of igniting the fire.
That's true. It's the first step. And we do a lot of fishing on these camps, and so the kids are introduced to quite a bit of fishing, and I do see kids that have followed through over the years and become they're good fisher men, good fisher women, and continue the sport on into the times that they're adults.
That's great. Do you have any of the kids that you've had up there before that have come back and helped you with the camp at all, or is that something that hasn't happened yet?
I have. There was one time that he was a leader, a youth leader of one of the organizations.
That's great.
He came into camp and he said, "Do you recognize me?" Well, he was 8 years old when he was
sure,
in camp.
Sure.
Now he was 20 years old.
Right.
And he comes into camp and he goes, you remember me? I said, I'm sorry, I really don't. And he goes, well, I was in camp, a number of years ago. And when I said his name, I said, oh, yeah, I remember now. I see some of that. And he, as a child, got to the point where he was very involved in the outdoors and started taking some of these other groups from different youth organizations out into the outdoors.
That's got to be pretty neat to see the, I was talking to a friend of mine here the other day who's got a puppy, and I was talking to him and he was talking about getting out there and really kind of seeing the light bulb turn on for that puppy. But when you're seeing that number of kids come through there, there's got to be some that, you see their eyes just light up. I've taken a lot of young kids bobber fishing for bluegills or whatever it is. And as soon as they feel the tug on the end of their line, there is an excitement there that it's so exciting and fun to watch.
There's a nice video on the Arizona Outdoor Adventures website.
What's that website, if you would?
It's azoutdooradventures.org. And got to remember the .org. And we also have a YouTube channel, and there's some nice wildlife videos on there. But one video in particular was done by Chuck Klein out of California, and he spent 3 days with us in camp and took put a 9-minute video together, showing the kids catching fish and out rolling around the Jeep and doing some tubing down the river and a couple of interviews with the kids. It's a nice video for anybody that'll sit down. Anymore, it's hard for anybody to sit and watch something more than 10 minutes.
Yeah, it's crazy. Yeah.
If anybody will take the time and watch it, it's a very informative video and well done.
One thing that I was very guilty of this myself. The first time I was ever in Arizona, I was probably about 6 years old because I have an aunt who lives down in Douglas. Whenever I thought about Arizona, I wasn't thinking about mountains and fishing for trout. I was thinking about deserts and cactus and kind of tell the folks a little bit about, when you say that you're up in the White Mountains, what kind of elevation are you at and what kind of fish are you catching and that kind of stuff?
Our camps are are generally, in here in the White Mountains anyway, generally anywhere from 9,000 feet to 8,000 feet in elevation.
Okay.
And we're, all the fish that we're catching are trout, several different species of trout. But one of the things that the kids really like to do is catch crawdads.
Oh, sure.
And I'm talking about, like, fishing for crawdads. And when we get these little dock poles, you know, they're about 2.5 feet long. And we head over to one of the areas where there's a lot of crawdads and tie a little bacon and a weight on the end of that dock pole. And kids will pitch it out into the water, and I just tell them, watch the line. It'll start to move in a little while. When it starts to move, that crawdad's carrying the bacon away. All you have to do is just reel him in slow, pull him up, and you'll have a crawdad sometimes two or three on one piece of bacon.
Oh, that's pretty neat.
And kids have a lot of fun with that. And the nice thing about those little dock poles is they're learning to cast without a hook.
Sure, sure. Yeah, you don't have to worry
and
about
it's
getting
more like, yeah, it's like fishing where they watch the lion moves, and then they bring the crawdad in.
That's pretty neat. That's very neat. During the other times of the year when you're not up in the mountains, do you guys do any hunting activities for the dogs at all? Like small game stuff, like rabbits, squirrels, anything like that?
With the kids?
Yeah.
We don't through Arizona Outdoor Adventures. There's kids that I do take as an individual, one or two at a time, but we're not doing any kind of a group thing. It
okay.
might be something down the road to do, and I have given that some thought. In fact, I've talked to some people in the past about going to one of the preserves, you know, where there's hen-raised birds.
Sure.
And just having a group of kids out there and watch the dogs, you know, watch a trained dog, how he'll work birds and then the shooting and then also cleaning the birds. One of the sponsors that has started to help us out with Arizona Outdoor Adventures camps are the two Phoenix chapters of Quail Forever.
Okay.
The Valley of the Sun chapter and also the Southern Arizona chapter. And those two chapters are doing a lot to bring kids out on it. Like it's a one day deal to expose them to the outdoors. So
that's great.
It is. It's so good to see kids beginning to get the just to get the feel of the outdoors and what it's all about and how enjoyable it is to be out there.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I couldn't agree with you more. I started going with my grandfather fishing and riding along when he was checking traps and riding along for bird hunting when I was about 5 or 4. And I started carrying a shotgun when I was 8. I've been doing this for 80% of my life, you know. And
you know what? We're pretty close then because you started carrying a shotgun when you were 8.
Yep.
I started carrying a shotgun when I was 7.
Yeah, that's, I mean, you know, and now there's, I was talking in the intro earlier that it seems like once that calendar rolls over to July 1st, all that I can think about at that point on is bird hunting. And I'm sure it's a little bit different down there with you guys because September is just too unbearable hot to hunt. And you guys don't have any seasons open other than doves anyways. I mean, and I do want to touch just a little bit on the dove hunting up in Yuma if you ever get a chance, if you've ever done any of that. But your guys' quail season doesn't really get rolling until October. But by this time of the year, I am chomping at the bit so hard, ready to get out there and go bird hunting, that it's like it occupies all my thoughts for most of the day. It is really kind of out of control. And it's all because I got started with it when I was 7, 5, 6, 7 years old.
Yeah, And that is a formidable age right there. And, you know, by the time, I think by the time kids are up into their teens, it's so hard for them to become interested. And if they're started early in that, you know, 8, 9, 10 years old, I think they pick it up a lot quicker. They seem a lot more interested. They listen more.
Well, I think a lot of it, too, is that by the time that they, you know, if you start them at, you know, literally, I've taken kids fishing with a bobber off of the end of a dock when they were 6 or 7 years old. If you start them that early, they don't really have, like, they're like a piece of clay a little bit. I mean, they don't really have any interests of their own at that point. They're still so young. That's where true. they're trying to figure things out. So, yep. You know, if you start them at that age, they don't really ever learn any other way. You know, that is what they, you know, they, it becomes ingrained in them, I guess would be the best way to put it. If you don't start taking kids until they're in their teens, most of them have their own interests. And you know, sometimes they may really fall in love with something like that at that age, but a lot of times it's gonna play second fiddle to whatever else that they feel passionate about at that moment.
That's true. It's the earlier the better.
I think so too.
For kids to be in the outdoors and be out there at 3 and 4 and 5, just you know, camping and that kind of thing, maybe shooting a BB gun a little bit. That sort of thing is so important.
Sure.
You know, Tyler, if I could throw something out, you don't mind if I take a couple minutes and throw something out here, do you?
No, go ahead.
About my background.
No, that's fine.
Last Saturday night, the Arizona Elk Society had a fundraiser in Sholo, and they surprised me with quite an award. And I had no idea it was going to happen. But they get up and they're talking about how they want to give this award to this man that's in the audience there. I have no idea it's me.
Uh-huh.
And so Jim Warren is the president of the chapter, and so Jim starts talking about this kid that grew up shooting grasshoppers with a rubber band gun as a little kid, and then moved on as a little kid to a BB gun, and then moved on to slingshots and shooting birds out of the air with a slingshot and all of that kind of stuff as a little kid. And the whole time Jim is talking about that, I'm going, you know what? Whoever that guy is, it sounds kind of like something I did. And as he kept going on and on and on, and I figured out, oh, man, that's me. And brought me up, and, you know, and it was a real nice little award that they gave me for what's been going on with Arizona Outdoor Adventures.
Wow. It's well deserved, Dan. It really is. I mean, it's very well deserved.
Well, thank you. It does start as a little kid in rubber band guns and slingshots and BB guns and all of that kind of stuff.
Oh, you
stuff to start on.
I was I got my first BB gun when I was 5. And there wasn't a English sparrow in my neighborhood that was safe. I was playing Davy Crockett, and they were my quarry.
They were the bears. Bears and mountain lions and all of that.
Man stuff. Alive. I mean, I remember the first day I got a squirrel. That was like big game hunting with a BB gun, you know. I knocked the squirrel down out of this tree at my neighbor's, like right out of my neighbor's backyard. And by the time my grandpa got home, I think I was only 6 years old, but I was trying to skin that thing. And I wasn't doing a very good job of it, but he was laughing, you know, and he was having a good time with it, and he showed me how to do it and helped me cook it and everything else. But I mean, you're not wrong. I mean, you know, that it's all about steps, you know. You start watching somebody uh-huh. else do it, and then when you finally get to start doing it, but yeah, I mean, the award that they gave you was very well deserved. And you know, we have a mutual friend, Jonathan O'Dell, from the Arizona Game and Fish Department.
Right.
He's been on my podcast a couple times, and he came down there when I was down last year and hunted, and he mentioned he sang your praises as well when we were down in Douglas last year, down at my aunt's bed and breakfast. He started talking about the Q5, and he said that he was kind of your your more or less your plus size model for designing the center fire, and that's how you kind of, you know, you guys had kind of gotten to know each other. But he said, if you ever get a chance to get Dan on your podcast, you have to. Just he's a great guy, and the things that he does for the youth is very admirable. And that's when I kind of started looking into and started trying to find out when we could link up and get this thing done. And see, only 7 months later, here you are.
It has been a while, hasn't it?
It has. It has. But that's all right. You're a busy guy. I mean, there's a lot more important things in this world than talking to me on a stupid podcast, I promise. Well,
I'm glad we finally were able to get the time set up.
Me too. So let's talk. I want to talk a little bit about hunting down there. Because uh-huh. I have really fallen in love. I can't imagine myself ever not spending at least a couple weeks in January, and probably in some Decembers and Februarys as well, spending at least a few weeks down there chasing your guys' birds around. Yep. You know, we mentioned, and I'd kind of like to start with, you know, I mentioned a little bit about the dove hunting over in Yuma. Do you do much dove hunting, or are you more just a quail hunter?
Well, I did a lot of dove hunting at one point in time. I have not since the camp started, because the camps are still going on in the White Mountains.
Oh, sure.
In September.
Okay.
So that has eliminated me from shooting any doves. Sometimes I do get out on a feedlot and shoot some Eurasian doves and get in on some of that. But my September dove shooting has gone by the wayside. And then, you know, the winter dove season, during quail season, and I guess, just to be truthful, I'd rather hunt quail.
I gotcha. I mean, I completely understand. We are moving our trip down there this coming January up a week, just so that we can get in some evening dove shooting. Because it's last year, I think we got there on the last day of season, so we're going to try to get there a couple days early, because we've seen piles of white wings and mourning doves down there when we were in several spots, and we were hunting both gambles and merns, actually. But
yeah, that's a good combination hunt.
Well, yeah, I mean, and you know, we're down there for a week, or I'm going to be down there for 2 weeks this January. And there's sometimes when a guy and his dogs just need to take an afternoon off and sit by a water stock dam and shoot doves.
I agree.
So, all right, let's talk a little bit about the quail that you, which out of the three species down there, if you had a choice, what would be the one that you would chase primarily?
Boy, that is such a loaded question. You know, the populations of all of these different Arizona birds change so much. And there's years when gambles are way down, and it's hard to find any gambles quail around.
Like last year.
In any kind of numbers, anyway. And then there's years when merns quail are way down, and there's hardly any merns quail. So, you know, when it comes right down to it, I suppose I would just, I don't really have too much of a preference. Other than whenever the numbers are up, that's the one bird that I want to hunt. Merns are so, it's hard to beat merns quail just because of the dog work, because of, you know, the cubby rise.
And the country.
And, and that, you know, that whole scenario. But I'll tell you what, and you've probably done it, Tyler, when you get in, you get a bunch of gambles or scale quail scattered in good cover, and you're shooting singles, and sometimes you have two and three birds coming up at a time,
mm-hmm.
That's pretty hard shooting to beat.
Yeah, I'd agree. The thing about chasing, and my dogs haven't figured it out just yet. I mean, they haven't got to hunt those gambles enough to really figure it out, but that the country that those gambles live in can be pretty inhospitable to dogs. I mean, they'll figure it out, but you know, especially down there where we have been hunting the last couple of years down there by Douglas, we have gotten, last year we got all three species down there. In fact, we got all three species out of one spot, which was pretty incredible. But we you know, the rock down there is that volcanic, they call it Malpai rock. I don't know if that's the correct term or not, but it's so abrasive on the dog's pads. And my dogs have pretty tough pads because, I mean, by the time they're down there, they've been hunted for 4 months or 3 months, you know. But the couple times that we've really gotten into the gambles good, and I'm, as you know, the gambles hunting this last year was not great by any stretch. It was good. I mean, we still got birds, but it was down a decent amount from the year before. And this year, hopefully, I know you guys got a pile of rain this winter, so hopefully this coming year will be better for gambles. But when you're hunting those gambles, what's the best way to put this? Do you have kind of a, like, is there a certain thing that you're looking for in the desert, or do you just kind of get out and just start walking?
No, it depends. You know, there's so many different kinds of desert terrain.
Right.
Desert terrain over in the western part of the state, that's a whole lot different than other desert terrain. And,
sure.
If you're hunting where there's a lot of washes and brush in the washes, and
that's where we found them last year.
Yeah, and they're gonna the birds are gonna roost. Generally, they're gonna roost in and around the washes and in the brush associated with washes.
And then they kind of scatter out throughout the day, right?
Well, again, it depends on the day and what's going on with that day, but. They'll move out. They'll move out and begin to feed and move out away from the washes. And then if it's a warm day, they might move back in and brush up a little bit some of the brush. But again, it depends so much on what that country is like.
Sure.
And the country is so variable in this state that there's a lot of, well, just say for an example with scaled quail, so much of that country, there's no washes or very little washes at all, just long, flat country.
Right.
And I find with birds, whether it's scaled quail or gambles quail, if there's something out there that's a little bit different, in other words, if there's, you're out in kind of a flatland area and there's a big prickly pear patch or there's a patch of yucca or something like that I'm going to be going that direction. And then if there's a brushy area that's a little out of the ordinary and looks a little different, seems like the birds like that kind of thing. Even with some of the old homesteads, you know, in scaled quail country, it seems like they like to hang around just some junk.
Sure. Like a
junky old bar or windmill, and they're not so much, I mean, they're going to be around windmills when there's water, but sometimes they just like to get around structure.
That makes sense.
So that's kind of like what you'd be doing when you're looking for a big bass, you know, looking for structure and looking for the structure for bird hunting as well.
Sure. You know, hunting those gambles quail and the way and scale quail too, but, I got a little bit more experience hunting the gambles in Arizona specifically. The way that they run on a dog is, you know, and my dogs coming from up here in North Dakota are used to running pheasants. So my dogs didn't have a ton of a real big learning curve trying to figure out, you know, that these birds are moving and we're just going to kind of move. I guess, you know, and all the dogs you've had over the years, have you had a dog that kind of just knows which bird you're hunting? Like, because if you have a dog that creeps at all hunting Mearns quail, it can be disaster. But you kind of almost need a dog that creeps a little bit hunting gambles quail. Do the dogs just kind of figure out what you're hunting?
Well, there have some dogs that I have had will creep right along with me.
Sure.
And if I see a covey running, I'll run into the covey to get him up if need be, and that dog will begin to stay right alongside me. and I've had several dogs like that.
Okay.
Boy, those are the nice dogs to have for gamble's quail.
Sure.
They're not going to get out ahead and break the birds, but something else, and I don't think, I'm not sure I should say this, but I'll say it anyway. I know that I'm a little bit different when it comes to bird hunting, but sometimes I'll carry some Magnum 4s.
Mm-hmm.
And when those birds are out there running, and especially scaled quail, I might just go ahead and stick those 4s in my gun and shoot out over those birds and send some shot out over them. Let them hear those that heavier shot hit out around them. Let them hear it go through the air, and sometimes that's the only way to get them up.
I know it. No, and I... You know, anybody who says that, who has hunted those birds and hasn't hasn't had to do something like that to get them to go, they're just lying, or else they're a better man than I am, because there's only so far that I'm going to run behind a covey of quail before I just can't take it no more.
Gamble's quail really want to run hard.
Right.
They'll run 10 to 15 miles an hour.
Right. Right. Yeah.
And that the kind of terrain they're in, most people aren't going to run 10, 15 miles.
No, not a chance.
Sometimes the only alternative is, if you've really got some of those wild running coveys, is to take some heavy shot and send some heavy shot out over them. And at times, that's the only way that they're going to take to the air.
Sure. You know, last year, and I'm just going to talk about last year just because it's kind of still fresh in my mind. And then, you know, I'll kind of give you this one little story, and then I want to talk about Mern's quail a lot. So last year we were kind of having a tough time finding the gambles, because, as you know, last year wasn't a real high year for them. And
right.
So we were walking. Do you know who Warner Glenn is? The mountain lion.
Yes,
hunter?
I do.
Okay, he's a friend of my aunt's, and so we were hunting on his ranch down there, down right on the border.
Uh-huh.
And he'd told us, you know, that they'd seen some birds, but he knew that there wasn't quite as many around as there had been. But he kind of steered us towards this one arroyo, and boy, we went in there, and I mean, it was getting real close to the end of the day. I mean, we probably had. When we were walking back, the sun set, and we pulled the shells out of our guns and got out of the arroyo and walked out. So, I mean, it was late in the afternoon, and we got into a covey of probably 50 or 60 birds, which would, in my mind, would be a couple of different coveys.
Right.
But, you know, that was pretty much the only spot that we seen a good number of gambles quail, and we ended up shooting, I think we got 7 or 8. There was a couple of us out there walking, and we got some nice dog work out of it. And seeing that number of birds, we're like, okay, well, let's come back here tomorrow and try this again, because we had to literally just quit in the middle of the hunt. And we went back there the next day, and we walked the same exact arroyo with the same dogs, and I think we got 3 birds, and I think we saw 7 is all we saw.
Yeah.
You know, are they that, you know, like we were talking about here just a few minutes ago, where they will roost in those arroyos and then they kind of scatter out into the desert? Or, I mean, quail in general, they have a pretty tight home range, right? Like, they wouldn't have just blown out of there and went someplace else, would have they?
Well, one thing that might have happened is, you know, those are old birds, generally.
Mm.
Like last year, there was no hatch.
Right.
So you've got some pretty educated birds.
Sure.
And even if they had never been hunted, they're still older birds.
Mm-hmm.
And they might hesitate, but they might not want to get back in that same place for, you know, it might take them a while to get back in that same home range.
That makes some sense.
Yeah.
With the
young birds. Young birds might get back in there, and if you got a, you know, 80-90% young birds, they might have cut you back up a little quicker. But those old birds, they've been through a few years, and they they know better. I mean, they want to stay alive another day.
That makes sense. Yeah, I didn't even think about that, but yeah, with there being such a low hatch, that would make a ton of sense. I know that you guys got a ton of rain this last winter. How do you think the hatch went? Do you have any anecdotal evidence or any rumors or anything about them gambles yet?
Well, certain areas it looks like there's going to be a pretty good number of birds, and the hatches have been good sized hatches, the ones that I know about.
Good.
But there again, there just wasn't a whole lot of carryover birds, so it's kind of up in the air. One thing we do know for sure, it's going to be better than it was last year.
Sure, sure. And with the rain that you guys had, and I'm going to have Jonathan Odell on here in just another couple of weeks and talk, go into a little bit more depth with him on this, but since you guys had so much rain this winter, did them scale quail nest out the same time the gambles did then? Because I know they'll kind of go either way. They can either go with the winter rains or with the summer rains, right?
They can, yes. Their activity, their breeding activity, is strung out a lot more than the other birds. And there have been times that in certain areas where scale quail, there might not have been any kind of a rain during the winter to
sure.
speak of,
sure.
but good rains summer, and they'll respond to that.
Okay.
And I've seen like little, birds that can't even fly yet in October.
Sure.
It's just been hatched out.
Yep. Yep.
They will respond to summer rains, but it's going to be an interesting season. One thing that I would predict is it'll sure be better than it was last year.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I mean, even when we were down there in January, we had a day where we got rained out, and the week before we got there, it snowed down there in southeastern Arizona, like a decent amount. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, all that moisture that they did get, and that's at a time of the year where it's generally dry, really dry.
Yeah.
So, I mean, yeah, I'm really looking forward to it. How's have you guys been seeing any monsoon activities yet as far as the season comes?
There was a little surge of moisture just in the last few days, but it's beginning to dry out again. And I just read a prediction today that said that the monsoon might be a little bit weaker
okay.
this year, and also coming in a little later.
Okay.
But the White Mountains are green right now, and I have never seen the White Mountains, it's been a long time since I've seen the White Mountains look as green as what it is right now
sure.
in late June and early July.
Sure. Well, I mean, I mentioned earlier the little town of Wilcox down there. I know that it's green down there as well still, which is really kind of crazy. I mean, the amount of moisture that you guys have had, and it hasn't been as hot as it generally gets down there either, right?
It's been favorable for a bird hatch on the desert anyway. It's still up in the air what might happen with Murns quail, but it's looking pretty good for in general for the state.
Sure.
As to what's going to happen on the desert.
So switching.
One thing I might add, Tyler, the call counts have been up, and the call counts are, during the mating season, and there's routes that's run, and
yep.
Jonathan can expand on that a little bit more, but the call counts on these different routes have been up.
Good.
And when that calling activity is up, there's usually going to be a little better hatch.
Good, good. Yeah, I'm very much looking forward to getting down there again this winter. But I'll tell you, when I'm down there, I generally only chase gambles about one day, maybe
uh-huh.
2 days. And the rest of the time, I'm up in the mountains chasing those goofy Murns. And they are such a fabulous little game bird that I've gotten...
Yeah,
I'm Murns crazy. In 2 years, I've gone from not even knowing what a Murns quail is to having them occupy my thoughts almost as much as these goofy Hungarian partridge up here by me. Last year was better than the year before, but When you're down there hunting, what's a good day of Mearns hunting down there? How many coveys will a guy move?
I would look at a good day as being 8 coveys or better.
Okay.
And really, you know, if a guy's going to hunt by himself and with a limit of 8 birds, all a guy really needs to shoot a sack of quail would be just a little handful of coveys.
Sure.
4 or 5 coveys, plenty.
Right.
But I always gauged it at about 8 coveys, and I've always thought that.
I think quails. Oh, go ahead.
What's that?
Oh, go. I'm sorry. Go ahead. I just kept on interrupting you on accident.
I've hunted Mearn squirrel since the late 60s and early 70s.
Okay.
And that was back before they were a popular bird. And even back then, I always figured 8 coveys or so was a pretty good day. But there were days that, you know, we'd hit 15, 20 coveys in a day.
Oh, my Lord. I can't even imagine. In the last 2 years, last year was certainly better than the year before, but it still wasn't to where it has been in past years. But I think the best, I've only been down there for 2 years, and I think the best day that we've had so far has been moving like 4 coveys, and the kind of the neat thing now, having hunted in the same general area for two consecutive seasons, is that we've done a good enough job of not shooting out the coveys to where, you know, we've been able to go back in there this last year and found coveys and more coveys in the exact same areas that we found coveys the year before. But, is up there, do you guys have any of the Mearns up there in the White Mountains, or is it all pretty much down there in the southeast corner?
No, there actually are Mearns quail here. In fact, we're at this point that I'm on.
Mm-hmm.
I'm looking at the spot right now where I saw a covey last year. In fact, I took some video of them. There was probably 10 or 12 birds in that covey.
Nice.
And most of the time I'll see, through the season, I'll see 4 or 5 different coveys.
Okay.
That's just how, just see them off the road or see them out when I'm out walking around.
Sure.
And back in there where, close to where camp's out right now, the other day before the rains came in, I saw what looked to be a couple, you know, it's probably a male and a female that
sure.
was together roaming around camp, and I haven't seen them yet, but I've seen their tracks.
Okay.
And I have seen Mearns quail actually all through this country. I've seen Mearns quail at 9,000 feet.
Mm-hmm.
Probably with, you know, there was a big fire that came through this country a few years ago, the Ball Fire. It burned 500,000 acres, and probably since this fire, it's going to open up a lot more country for Mearns quail. So,
sure,
I'm thinking that the Mearns quail might actually increase in this country, but they do live at some high elevations. There's one mountain, Escadilla Mountain, where I think the elevation there is over 10. If I'm not mistaken, and I have not seen Mearns on that mountain, but I've seen their sign.
Okay, where they've been
so they're scattered around all through the White Mountains.
Wow, that's they're such a cool little bird, and I mean it's both a blessing and it's really neat to see how people are really kind of starting to respond to them, and they're kind of starting to be that. I stopped over at a guy's house over in Montana here just a couple weeks ago to record a podcast, and he had a pair of Mearns quail mounted on his mantelpiece. I mean, they're starting to get to be kind of that, one of those trophy upland birds that kind of starting to get that status that they very much deserve. I mean, they're a terrific game bird.
Yeah, well, you know, you mentioned 4 coveys, and there again, if anybody's out there and they're looking at the quality of the hunt,
mm-hmm.
and they're finding 4 coveys in a day, they're doing fine.
Sure. And that's the way we felt about it. You know, I mean, we didn't hunt super hard because I was hunting with some older guys that were getting real warm and you know we and I was I at the time I had pneumonia, so I mean I wasn't exactly ready to tear it up either, but you know, the nice thing about those Merns is that more times than not they're going to offer some really nice dog work, and then they're going to scare the living hell out of you when they get up at your feet, and that's enough to keep a guy going back.
Delicious to eat as well.
Yes they are. We made some down there on the grill the last night we were there, and they were fantastic. Uh-huh. great eating. Well, Dan, I don't have any more questions for you. All I can do is thank you very much for all that you do for the kids and for taking a little bit of time to come on and kind of talk to the folks a little bit about some of your products. And hopefully this winter when I'm down there, hopefully you're not too busy and I can sneak up and hook up with you for a day and we'll go and chase some gambles or something.
Yeah, that'd be a good plan, and look forward to that. And I really do appreciate the opportunity to be on the podcast with you and talk a little Arizona bird hunting and talk a little bit about the different species of quail and Q5 and AOA and the whole works. A little bit about this part of the country.
Well, there you go. Well, thank you very much for taking the time, Dan. You drive back there and get back there and enjoy some fishing with them kids.
Okay, will do. Thanks a lot.
Thanks a lot, Dan. Have a good day.
All right. Mm-hmm. Bye.
All right, folks. Well, that is that. I've been trying, literally, like I mentioned, told Dan on the podcast, we've been trying to find a time since January to get hooked up and talk a little bit about some of his products. Great ambassador for the outdoors. Makes one hell of a product. Go and check it out at q5outdoorproducts.com. I swear you guys will not be sorry if you spend the money on one of these vests. They are fantastic. And go and check out a little bit of what he's doing with the Arizona Outdoor Adventures. It's really kind of a it's a really good feel good story. You know, I mean, he's introducing a lot of kids into camping up there in the mountains and everything else that may not get the chance to go otherwise. So we all owe him a big thanks. So by supporting some of his products and going there and doing some shopping, that's a good way to get a good product and kind of help support him all at the same time. So thank you very much, guys, for listening. I think I'm going to try to have Jonathan Odell on next week. So we'll just knock out two Arizona guests right away here in July. And then I got a bunch of other guys. I'm going to try to line Ed Arnett up from TRCP the week after that. And we're going to talk a little bit about what's going on with the sharptails and the prairie chickens and why the numbers are declining so fast, and as well as a bunch of other things. Ed's a pretty knowledgeable and interesting guy, so we'll talk to him here pretty soon. And I got a bunch of other good guests coming up here as well in July, so keep listening. Also, I'm going to give you guys a little warning. I think it's the 27th of July. I will probably have a couple of glasses of scotch, and I will probably talk to you guys one-on-one, do a little solo podcast as kind of a little bonus episode for the month. July 27th will be the two-year anniversary of this whole thing getting started. So we're about 114 episodes, I think, with this one now in 2 years. Been rolling right along. Numbers are getting really good, and it's growing, like I said, every month. But I did it last year, and I think I'm going to do it again this year, where I just kind of sit back and have a couple of drinks and just kind of, I don't know, word vomit into the mic or whatever the hell comes to mind. But I may end up doing that here. In fact, I may try to get Reese McGandy or Matt Schmidt, who are my first two guests. I may try to get corral one of those guys into having a couple of drinks with me, and we'll just kind of sit down and chat for a little bit and give you guys kind of a bonus episode for this month. All right, thank you very much. Thank you, Dakota 283 Kennels. Thank you, Dogtra Callers. Thank you, ESP. And most of all, thank you very, very much to you Patreon patrons out there that have been donating a few bucks. We're just a couple, 24 or whatever away before I can give away that Dakota 283 kennel and a bunch of other gifts. In fact, I may even try to sweet talk one of those Q5 vests out of Dan, see if I can't work out something with him, see if he'll donate one to give away to you Patreon patrons. We'll see what we can work out. Thanks a lot for listening, guys. We'll talk to you next week. Happy 4th of July. Do not blow off any fingers. And if you do, make sure it's on your non-shooting hand. That's pro tip right there.